Okay, everyone, good afternoon. Today is Wednesday, November 13th, and we are here at United Orthodox Synagogues for our weekly Lunch and Learn. And this week we are studying Parshat Vayera, and we are going to be specifically focusing on the episode with Sarah when she is abducted in Egypt. So let's please turn to chapter 20 in the book of Genesis, which is on, well, we're going to specifically, yeah, page 90. I'm sorry, not Egypt. This is in Gerar. Excuse me. Yes. Page 90. Okay, so let's just re-familiarize ourselves with the story. We'll just read a couple of psukim. We'll read like seven psukim. Vayisa misham Avraham Arza. This is chapter 20, verse 1. Vayisa misham Avraham Arza Hanegev Vayeshe ben Kadesh uben Shur Vayagar Bigrar. So Avraham was in Gerar. Vayomer Avraham el Sarah Ishto Achoti. Vayomer Avraham el Sarah Ishto Achoti hi. Vayishlach Avimelech Melech Gerar Vayikach et Sarah. Avraham said of Sarah his wife, "She is my sister." So Avimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. Vayavo Elohim el Avimelech b'chalom halayla vayomer lo hincha meit al ha'isha asher lakachta v'hi be'ulat baal. And God came to Avimelech in a dream by night and said to him, "Behold, you are to die because of the woman you have taken. Moreover, she is a married woman." Well, it's interesting. It sounds like it's two problems. One is you kidnap someone, and plus she's married.
He didn't know that she's married.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But he still took her.
Okay, but why did he say that?
He still took her. He did kidnap her. It says it. It says, Vayikach. Right? It says it. Vayikach et Sarah. He took Sarah. She didn't say that she went, so right, so he abducted her. Took her. But he took her. That's what the Torah says. He took her. Yeah. Okay. And then God says, "You're going to die because you took her. Plus, she's married." Now, of course, Avimelech didn't know that. We'll get to that. But Avimelech lo karav eleha. But Avimelech did not approach her. Vayomer Adonai hagoy gam tzadik tarog. He said, "My Lord, will you slay a nation even though it is righteous?" Also interesting, because God just tells Avimelech that he is going to die. In Avimelech's response, he assumes that everybody is going to die, not just him. Hallo, hu amarli achotihi, v'hi gam hi amra achihu. Did not he himself tell me she is my sister, and she too herself said he is my brother? Bitam levavi uvnikayon kapai asiti zot. This is sort of a little bit funny. In the innocence of my heart and the integrity of my hands have I done this. I mean, I just took a woman against her will, but I'm totally blameless for that. She's not married, so obviously there's nothing wrong with that. Okay, that just speaks to, I guess, the times. Vayomer elav Elohim b'chalom gam anochi yadati ki betam levavcha asita zot ve'echsoch gam anochi otcha meichato li alkein lo taticha lingoa aleha. And God said to him in a dream, "I too knew that it was in the innocence of your heart that you did this, and I too prevented you from sinning against me. That is why I did not permit you to touch her." Meaning God sort of stopped him from doing anything to Sarah. And now finally the pasuk we're going to focus on, V'ata hashev eshet ha'ish ki navihu. V'yitpalel b'yadcha v'chye v'im eincha meshiv da ki mot tamut ata v'chol asher lach. But now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet, and he will pray for you, and you will live. But if you do not return her, be aware that you shall surely die, and all you and all that is yours. So that's the interchange between God and Avimelech. And the next morning, we're told that Avimelech summons Avraham and takes him to task for not telling him the truth, etc. And he returns Sarah to Avraham.
It's the first time that we know that Avraham is Navi.
Ah, excellent. So I want to talk about that question. Ki Navi Hu. Let's just read the pasuk, right? It seems it's very strange, right? God comes to Avimelech and says, return this woman to his wife because he is a Navi. Right. It sounds like it would be okay. If he wasn't a Navi, it would be okay that you would take her. So the question is, what is the importance of God telling Avimelech that Avraham is a Navi? Again, verse number 7 is, but now return the man's wife, for he is a prophet. Vayit palel ba'ada v'chaya. And he will pray for you and you will live. Okay? So let's talk about this. Why do you think God added this notion that Avram's a prophet? Let's first address Shula's question, which was, is this the first time we're told that Avraham is a Navi? Yes. Not only that, but this is the first time in the Torah that the word Navi is used. We're 20 chapters in to the Torah, and this is the first time that word is used. So it's also unclear what it means. Right? In order to better understand why God told Avimelech that Avraham was a Navi, we should understand what a Navi is. And so maybe we'll know, if that's what a Navi is, now we know why God told that to Avimelech. So that's another question. So let's take both questions and see what we can come up with. What is a Navi? And why does God tell Avimelech this at this point? Any suggestions?
To be Navi, you have to go through a ceremony. Limshoch is a Navi.
Not necessarily.
That's what with Shmuel.
Sometimes, yes. Sometimes, yes, but not necessarily. Sometimes there's something more formal, but not all the time. And this is an example of someone who's being a Navi. Let me read you from the Jewish Publication Society commentary on the Chumash that talks about this. He says first, Hebrew Navi is used here in the Bible for the first time. A term of uncertain origin, it is widely believed to be connected with the Akkadian Nabu, which means to call. To call, Nabu, from the Akkadian, to call. Assyrian kings were entitled the one called, that is, called by gods. The form Navi in Hebrew could either signify one who receives the divine call, or one who proclaims, or a spokesman. So it means to call. It could be someone who was called, or someone who does the calling. The last meaning is favored by such texts as Shemot, and generally by the prophetic role as described by the Bible, meaning God's spokesman. Moshe was a Navi, and certainly in his interaction with Paro, right, Moshe is a spokesman, is God's spokesman. He keeps going back to Paro and telling Paro, this is what God said, this is what God said. So he seems to be a spokesman. The prophet is the spokesman for God to man, but intercession before God in favor of man is also an indispensable aspect of this function. that we see with Abraham and the people of Sodom. That sometimes the Navi's job is to stand between God and the people to protect them. We know that Abraham did that. We know that Moshe did that. We know that many of the prophets tried to find some sort of saving grace for the people so that God doesn't punish them or destroy them. Moshe frequently acts in this capacity, as does Shmuel, Amos, Yirmiyahu. It is primarily in the sense that Abraham is here designated as a prophet. So that's an interesting quote. Let's take this example. If prophet means someone who intercedes between God and people, then let's use that description of a Navi. Why would Moshe, why would God tell Avimelech that Abraham is a Navi in this case? What's Avraham? Right, good, right. Right.
And actually, in the later times, Judaism enforced it, especially when they started to get the false practice.
Right.
This is actually very important to put in parallel.
Yeah.
Real Navi and who we call false.
Right, good. So what about here? How does the Navi work here? Why is it important?
In the case, it's interesting because we know that Abimelech did have a dream. And we have multiple examples when real Navi, somebody like Yaakov Avinu, he also had a dream.
Right.
And we always say
right.
He was actually a sham.
A prophecy, yeah.
Directly intervened. Which we can say, okay, do we have to see different levels? This is what Torah wants to tell us, different levels of Navi. Abimelech is Navi.
Right. Abimelech gets some sort of prophecy here. Yeah. Yeah, he does. Abimelech, he is directly addressed by God in a dream, which is a prophecy.
He's.
Well, maybe he's not called a Navi here, but this is an aspect. There is an aspect that Nevuah comes in a dream.
Right.
And so, yeah, so Abimelech is experiencing a level of prophecy here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that there's a comparison, a contrast
exactly.
Between Abimelech and Abraham. But still, the question is, God says, return the woman because he's a Navi. How does the notion of being someone who intervenes on your behalf with God explain why God tells Abimelech that he's a Navi?
Because Abraham, if you want to say Madriga,
right.
What level he was, God was talking to him.
Right.
It means
right.
That,
certainly.
It got, dream,
right.
It means that what
although there is an opinion, I believe it's the Rambam, that says the only one who had a Navi who had a Nevuah, a prophecy while they were awake, was Moshe. Everyone else was in a dream, was when they were sleeping. But I think what's going on here is that God is telling Avimelech, if the word Navi, and presumably that's what people thought it meant then, means someone who intercedes, God is telling Abimelech, look, you did something wrong, but if you were and you're going to be punished, but don't worry, because there's this person, Abraham, who is a well-known negotiator between interceder between God and people, and he's going to pray for you. You started up with the right person, not the wrong person. You started up with the right person, because had it been someone else, who didn't have the capacity to intercede between me and you, you may be in bed, you may be in trouble. But since Abraham is a Navi, which means someone who intercedes with God on behalf of other people, if you return Sarah and you convince Abraham that you didn't do anything wrong and that you only took her because you thought she was his sister, then he will intercede, which is what he does. That's why I'm calling him a Navi. And you are going to live. But if you don't return her, then Avram's not going to intercede for you and you are going to die. You would wonder how Avimelech was feeling. I guess he would shudder at the thought what would happen had he started up with someone whose husband wasn't a Navi, right? Wasn't someone who had this capacity to intercede between them and God. Maybe he would have been in bad shape. Okay, so that is one approach. Go ahead.
On behalf of help, just the opposite. The offense is even worse because he's a holy man.
I'm suggesting the offense isn't every word. Isn't it worse? Why is the offense worse if someone abducts a Navi's wife and some other person's wife? Why is the offense any worse?
Because
I'm suggesting that it's not any worse. But the reason why God tells Avimelech this is because he tells him, you're getting off lucky, you're getting off easy, that because he is a Navi and someone who intercedes, you're going to be okay. But why? How would you feel about that? You feel that you're less important than a Navi's wife?
Well, if he's touching such a man of authority and closeness to God, so whatever you're doing, the sin is even much.
Okay. So one explanation of the reason why God tells Avimelech that he's a Navi is because he's letting Avimelech know that he's got a chance now to fix things. And it says that's why it says, Vayitpalel ba'adcha, he's going to pray for you. And why is that prayer going to work? Because he's a Navi. But if he wasn't a Navi, maybe the prayer wasn't going to work. That's one approach. Shula suggesting that the reason why God tells Avimelech that he's a Navi is because he's very, very important. And that's why God is so angry. But then it raises the issue of, again, does it really matter? I mean, is that really a function of the sin here? That because, in fact, when you read the description of the sin, it doesn't say that God, that she was the Navi's wife. It says God came to Avimelech and said, you took someone, and she's married. If the fact that she was the wife of a prophet was so important, he should have added that. He should have said, ooh, this is a triple, this is three strikes and you're out. You abducted someone, she happens to be married, and she's the wife of a Navi. But he didn't say that. All he said was, you took someone, and she's married. The fact that she's the wife of a Navi may not add to it. Shula's suggesting it does add to it, and the addition is told to us in Pasuk Zion in verse 7, and it could be he's very important and he's a Navi and he's going to pray for you and you're going to live. That's possible. There's another suggestion of what Navi means by the Rashbam. It was just very similar to what I read from you previously, but it gives a Hebrew linguistic connection. Ki Navihu, the Rashbam says, Lashon Niv Sifatayim, which means eloquent of speech. Right? He has a good command of speech. Ragil Etzli, Umidaber Et Divarai. He's a regular with me, meaning he has a relationship with me, and he shares my word. This is now a different view of the Navi. He's not someone who normally intercedes, but this is a spokesman definition of Navi, right? So one definition of Navi is that someone who intercedes with God. Another definition of Navi is someone who's the spokesman of God. So umidaber et divarai, he speaks my words. He's my spokesperson. V'ani ohev et divarav, and I love what he says, v'shomea tefilato, and I listen to his prayer. So this is really an amazing commentary about what God is saying about Avraham. Forget that what God is saying to Avimelech. What God is saying about Avraham here is that, how I understand it, is Ragil Eitzli, he's a regular with me, he seeks me out. And since he seeks me out, he is my spokesman, and I love him, and I'm going to listen to his prayer. So again, Avimelech is telling. You can look at this one of two ways. Avimelech is telling God is telling Avimelech, you started off with the wrong person. He's Ragil Eitzli, I love him, and since I love him, you're going to be in trouble because you took his wife. I don't really love that interpretation, because I think God would have been angry no matter whose wife Avimelech took. The second interpretation, and therefore, the second interpretation would be, like what we said before, you're lucky that you took Sarah, because since he's Ragil Eitzli, he's regular with me, and he's my spokesperson, and I love him, and I listen to his prayer, he's going to be able to get you out of this mess. So that's why God tells Avimelech that he's a Navi. He's trying. Maybe he's also trying to, in some way, comfort Avimelech about what he did. Let's just do Rashi. Then I'll take your comment and ask a question on all of them. Okay, Rashi has a different view. Rashi says as follows. This is still Pasuk 7. So we're on page 92. If you want to see Rashi's comment, it is on the bottom of the page in the right column. 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 lines from the bottom. At the end of the line, Ki Navihu. Ki Navihu. Viyodea Shelo Nagata Ba. He knows you didn't touch her. So now we have a third definition of a Navi. Definition number one, intercedes with God. Definition number two, spokesman. Definition number three, knows things. He sees what happens. He's a seer, right? A seer, right? And he knows that you didn't touch her. Maybe because God told him that, but he knows things. Lefichach vayitpalel badcha. Therefore, he's going to pray for you. Because since you didn't do anything wrong, he's going to pray for you. Okay, so those are the three definitions of Navi and how they fit into this conversation. I think they all raise a question, which I think the Netziv is going to answer. But Zach, first, your comment.
I can find that we really don't talk about Abraham and his guilt in those things.
That's for next year's class. That's next year's class. The Ramban says that he did a terrible sin. In this case, in the case back with in Egypt last week,
right.
Same thing. Yes, he also told them that he's his sister.
This is,
well, it didn't work either time very well.
Number two, he really did not lie when he said that she is his sister, because he said that she is the daughter of his father, and if he said that. For morality of the people who live in those times, you can marry your half sister.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, but which is the so called notion that our fathers, the new Torah, which is this one.
Right. Right. Right.
Not really.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, so let's yes, 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 yes.
I'm just suggesting to the custom of that time that it was not moral for a king. To just take a woman at his discretion.
It seems like that was the custom of the time, unless she was married. If she was married, he wouldn't take her. He would first probably kill the husband and then take her. It could be that it was common practice. Yeah, it's possible. Okay. All of this still begs a question. Because the pasuk says that Avimelech did not touch her. So then, if Avimelech did not touch her, why does Avraham need to pray for him? But he gave her back already. He gave her back. But he didn't do it. He didn't do anything. But he didn't do anything. Meaning he took Sarah, didn't do anything with more than taking her, returned her. So now the deed has been fixed. But God says, or he doesn't say, he hasn't returned her yet, but he's going to return her. He's committed to that. Why does God, and God says, and according to Rashi, Avraham knew. According to Rashi, right? Avraham knew that he didn't do anything. And God says, I know you didn't do anything. You know why? Because I stopped you from not doing anything. So then why does Avraham have to pray? Just return Sarah, and everyone goes their own separate ways. How's the act of taking fixed? If you steal money, how's it fixed? If you steal money, how's it fixed? By giving it back. But this is, but he did a bad thing to Avraham, and he fixed it. If someone takes money from you and they return it to you, that's it. It's over. You may feel bad about it, but you have no more claim on the person. So then why would Avraham have to pray for him?
He still had the bad thoughts. It occupied my mind.
But one second. You think what Avraham's going to pray that he not be killed. Avraham's not praying that he become a tzaddik. Avraham's not praying that he stops having bad thoughts. You think that after Avimelech let Sarah go, he said, oh, I don't think she's pretty anymore? No, he said, I think what he says, boy, I started up with the right/wrong person. I really would like to have my way with Sarah, but I'm not going to because I don't want to die. He didn't become a tzaddik after this. He still had thoughts. Let's see the Netziv. What's your thought?
My thought is, he has to pray not for Avimelech. He has to pray for as a psychoanalyst. Consider that Abraham is patient.
Yeah.
He wanted him to open himself to understand how wrong was he when he suggested that she.
It's interesting because then, but why wouldn't God have just told him what you did was wrong?
Because it's very important. And actually, Torah food, for example, they want what is tshuva?
It's a more often though the Torah will be very explicit. It's not as often. Usually, the Torah will say you did a sin. And not wait for Avram. It's a fascinating idea Avimelech is being tricked into thinking he's still going to be punished, even though he rectified his sin, so that Avram can face what he did. Right. So.
He didn't rectify his sin completely because he still had the desire.
But again, how is Avraham's prayer for Avimelech going to change his desire? It's not. Avraham has no power over Avimelech. The only thing Avraham has power over now is the punishment that Avimelech is going to get. And according to what we're suggesting, Avimelech didn't change his mind. Avimelech is not at all in this chapter described as a good person.
He's innocent.
Right? He's not. So I don't think it's true that he thought of doing something wrong and he did it, but then he rectified it. First of all, we don't know if he has any more of these bad thoughts. And second of all, I assume he does. And Avraham's not going to fix that. So.
Maybe the prayer was for Avraham to learn something. He should stop saying.
So that's what Zach is saying. Maybe it's to right. So that's what Zach is saying. Maybe it's to have Avraham face up to what he did.
Yeah.
Possible. That's an interesting suggestion. The Netziv has a different suggestion. Let's see it. You don't have it inside. I'm going to read it to you. First, the Netziv says, "V'lo nitpa'er adayin lama hu tzarich letfila." It's unclear why Abimelech needed anyone to pray for him. Achar shelo chata velo nagaba. He didn't sin or touch her. Now, he did sin by taking her, but that's going to be rectified by returning her. So he didn't touch her. V'chi b'shvil shehayan nitzrach l'shmira mehakadosh baruch hu hu neherag. And is Abimelech potentially going to be killed only because God stopped him from sinning? At the end of the day, he didn't do it, right? Because God says, you didn't sin because I didn't let you sin. So that's a reason to kill someone? At the end, he didn't sin. What's the difference? I'm about to go rob a bank and someone else stops me. Okay, I didn't do it. I wanted to do it. I still want to do it. But I didn't do it. So I'm free of being punished. We don't get punished for thinking that we want to do bad things. We only get punished for doing bad things. You don't get punished for plotting.
You arrest somebody because...
I'm not talking about American law. First of all, no, that's not true. If I sit in my house and I plot to rob a bank and don't do it, that you can't arrest me for that.
No, if they come and see that you really have all the
elements... No, I don't, if I just plot... I'm not talking about collecting illegal weapons. If I have my own gun that I'm allowed to own, and I plan on robbing a bank, I don't think I could be arrested for that. But even if I can, in Jewish law, we don't get punished for thinking that we want to sin. In fact, we are rewarded for thinking we want to sin and not sinning. Right? So it's unclear why Abimelech needs prayer. Besides taking Sarah, which he's going to rectify, he did not do anything. And the fact that God stopped him should not be a reason why he should be killed. So what's going on? Why did Abimelech need Avraham's prayer? Okay. Let's keep going. Ella, al korchach ikar achet hu ma shetzier la Avraham. It's a little different take. It's a little bit maybe unsettling, but interesting. He says the main sin is that Abimelech troubled Avraham. Of course, Sarah is the main victim here, right? But after that, Sarah is, the fact of the matter, Sarah is going to be returned. So who's left with the angst, according to the Netziv? Avraham. Because his wife was taken, and that troubled him. Up to, yeah, let's get there, hold on. And then he quotes the Gemara, and this is an important Gemara because we learn a lot of halachot. We learn an important halacha about tshuva, about repentance from this Gemara. Afal gav shuno tein lo ein nimchal lo tsaro ad shiva kesh rimeno. So this was what I think we were. Lior was getting to this a little bit. If someone steals something from someone, and they return it, the Gemara says they are not forgiven until for the tsarot, for the distress that they caused the person, until they ask for forgiveness. Okay? Until they ask for forgiveness. Okay? That's why. So the Siv goes on and to remind us, right, that there's the Mishnah in Masechet, what did I say? In Masechet Bava Kama, that says if someone injures their friend, they are not forgiven, even though they paid out the injury. Ad sheivakesh mechila mechavero al hatzar shetziaro, until they ask for forgiveness for the trouble that they caused. And the Gemara's proof for that is our story. Right? The Gemara uses our story as a proof for one of the fundamental rules of repentance, that there are two things that one is guilty of when they injure or steal. One, the physical injury or the theft, and the second is the mental anguish, the tsar. The physical injury or the theft is easily fixed by paying for the damage you did to their car or by returning the lost object. The tsar, the mental anguish, requires a conversation between the person, the victim, and the person who did the crime, who did the deed, right? And that's our source. So then the question is, if Avimelech in fact harmed Avraham, why does he require prayer? Okay, so the Netziv says, Mikan Lamadnu Shachote ben Adam Lechav. So who should Avimelech have to go speak to?
Avraham.
Avimelech should have to go speak to Avraham. That's still missing from here. Right? So why is Avraham going to pray for God? So it's going to bring up another level. So the first thing we learn is that the reason why Avimelech was still at risk of being punished was because even though Sarah was going to be returned, he has not yet dealt with the tsar that he caused Avraham, the mental anguish that he caused Avraham. Okay? But God says, Avraham's a Navi. He knows you didn't touch her. So he's going to pray on your behalf anyway. And so the Netziv says, again, why pray to God? And the Netziv answers beautifully. Mikan lamadnu, shachote ben adam l'chaveiro, hu chet ben adam l'shamayim gamken. That when you sin against a person, you're also sinning against God. U'kishemitpayes meha adam, adayin nitzrach levakesh kapara me'akadosh baruch hu. So now there's three things that need to be done. You have to return the stolen item or pay damages. You have to speak to the person who you caused anguish to try to smooth that over. And you have to ask God for forgiveness. Ukishemitpayes me'adam adayin nitzrach levakesh kapara me'akadosh baruch hu mishum hachi nitzrach letfilat Avraham sheyehi mechol lo. So Avraham stands in and says to God, I'm forgiving Avimelech, so you should. And since I'm forgiving Avimelech, and I'm the one he caused anguish to, you should also forgive Avimelech.
So every sin that we do between Adam and Chavero is really also a sin between Adam and Hashem.
Yes.
Is it accepted like that?
Yes, and it makes sense because who? Let's say we speak lashon hara. So if I speak lashon hara, if I speak gossip, I'm harming a person. But who told me not to speak gossip? God. God told me not to speak gossip. So then I'm sinning against God. If I go steal money, talk about the bank robbery. So I'm stealing money from the bank. That's been Adam l'chavero. But who told me? Lo tignov. Who told me not to steal? God. Right? The truth of the matter is every ben Adam l'chavero sin, every interpersonal sin, is a double whammy. It's an interpersonal sin, and it's a sin between us and God. On the other hand, every sin between us and God is only one. Only between us and God. So in this way, sins between people, interpersonal sins, are more severe than sins between us and God. And so even though, in this case, Avimelech paid back, again, it's hard to speak about it this way, because it almost turns Sarah into a commodity, which, of course, we don't want to do, right? But so even though Avimelech returned Sarah as he was responsible to, he doesn't really get full forgiveness until he asks the people he caused anguish to forgive them. And the place we learn that from is in this case. And so the truth is that it seems a little troubling because we could easily say something similar just about Sarah. The person who Avimelech really caused anguish to was Sarah, and she's the one who he has to ask for forgiveness from. And she or Avraham can pray to God on Avimelech's behalf. Really, the truth is Avimelech should be praying to God on his own behalf, but God sort of forestalls that and says, Avram's going to do that for you. So the reason why we care that Avraham is a Navi is because he has this prayer capacity. Right? So it's not any better or worse that Abimelech took Sarah, even though she was Avraham's wife. The key is the rest of the pasuk is why did Abimelech need any additional action on his behalf, and the Netziv, through his interpretation of events, explains why. Yeah.
I cannot accept the explanation because if you look pasuk second part of pasuk 5,
mm-hmm.
Can you read it? Second part when he talks about his innocent heart.
Uvnikayon kapai asiti zot.
And then his full hands.
That's it. Yeah.
Right.
Betam levavi.
And then beginning of pasuk 6.
Yeah.
What Hashem said. I know. And this is the key.
But he says, I know you didn't touch her.
No, he said that he knows that he did it.
Right, but he still caused trouble. He still caused tsar.
No, but he is innocent in the eyes of Hashem because he accepts that he did it with his innocent heart and clean hands. This is what I'm trying to say.
So that's a good. That's right. But that's an interesting question. You're assuming that if someone does something with an innocent and clean heart, that it may not amount to a sin. And here we're seeing it might, meaning we could have the best intentions, but it still may hurt someone.
Different
Maybe
standards.
That's the lesson.
Different standards apply. This is what he's actually trying to teach us. We have two different cultures. Culture of Abimelech and culture of Abraham. Abimelech did what he's supposed to do based on, and he even saying that.
It's a good point.
Please don't touch my people because they are.
Okay, then we're back to the question: Why does he need? If this is so absolute, why does Avram need to pray for him?
Because this is what I think it happened that Hashem wants him.
But it says Vayitpalel be'adcha. Avram's going to pray for you. Otherwise, it should have left out. According to your theory, it should have said Vayitpalel. He's just going to pray, and then we could have interpreted it to mean Aram's going to pray and come to realize his blame in this whole thing. But he says, "Ba'adcha v'chaye," and you'll live. And if he doesn't pray, you're going to die. So it seems like it's too much.
No, I tell you what happened.
Yeah.
When psychoanalysts intervene in a family dispute, usually doesn't talk to husband or wife separately. He brings them together, and he wants them to face each other and talk loudly what was wrong. And they want them, listen what you're saying.
Right.
This is exactly.
But it's not, because Avram's not talking to Avimelech and God's not answering Avram back. It's one person talking.
The prayer is one person talking. You talk to greatest.
Right. But there's no response. It's a monologue. There's no response. Prophecy is a dialogue. Prophecy is a dialogue. Prayer is a monologue.
No, but in the monologue, you
do voice, right?
What you're talking about, he would have to say.
Okay.
Don't.
I'm going to agree to disagree. Okay. I think it's too much at the end when he goes over and says so many times, he's going to pray for you, and you'll live. And if he doesn't pray for you, then you'll die. I think that's too much of an emphasis on the fact that Avimelech needed the prayer. You're suggesting, which is beautiful, that the prayer was not for Avimelech. It was a way to force Avraham to verbalize. But the prayer, if we knew what the prayer was, it may be easier to answer this question, but we don't know what the prayer is. Okay, good. Yes.
So, what I'm going to just kind of spin it around.
Yeah. Maybe. That's just conjecture. Maybe. Or maybe he wouldn't have taken her at all. Maybe the ethos was that a married woman is off limits. Unclear. But let's assume you're right. Go ahead.
Then had he known that, he's like, well, I told you she was my sister because he had those intentions of killing her. Or he says, surely I would die. You know, say this name. So if it goes in perspective, it goes all the way around. He's apologizing to him or having to apologize to him because those intentions still could have been on his heart or on his mind of, hey, had I wouldn't have told you that she was my sister, no, you would have done harm to me.
But there's no conversation. Yeah, so I understand that. But so how does that play into our question?
Well, it's trying to look at it from that perspective, because he's apologizing for having done wrong or having because.
Well, he doesn't apologize. In verse 8, Abimelech arose early the next morning. He summoned all his servants and told them all of these things in their ears, and the people were very frightened. And Abimelech summoned Abraham and said to him, what have you done to us? Have I sinned against you and you brought upon me? He doesn't apologize at all in verse 8, Abimelech. He's like, this is all your fault, Abraham. You lied to me. Deeds that are not to have been done have been done to me. What did you see that you did such a thing? And Avram said, there's no fear of the Lord in this place. But never once does Abimelech say, oh, well, let's put it that way. Abimelech never admits that he did anything wrong.
So what we learn about Chet, the Zadon of Beshogeg, purposely or by mistake, you're still a sinner because you caused Tzar?
So I think that...
In practical terms.
Yeah, in practical terms, I don't think it's necessarily the same as a planned sin, but if you one could try to do something in pureness of your heart, but it could still backfire, and could still cause someone sorrow. And in that case, we're responsible for it. Yeah. By the way, when I said before that prayer is a dialogue, right? It's important to note that Rabbi Soloveitchik, right, had a very different view of prayer. Rabbi Soloveitchik felt that prayer was a dialogue with God, not a monologue, right? That even normally we view prophecy, as I said, as a dialogue, right? The prophet and God are communicating with each other, and prayer is often viewed as a monologue, that we are talking to God, and God is not necessarily talking back. Rabbi Soloveitchik said that prayer is a dialogue with God, and there's a real encounter with God through the prayer, and the prayers itself are God's answers to us, and that's a very important aspect of Rabbi Soloveitchik's understanding of prayer. So that goes more to Zach's point that it could have been actually a dialogue as opposed to a monologue. Rabbi Soloveitchik says that prayer and prophecy are different aspects of the dialogue. They're mirror image of each other. In prophecy, God is the speaker and the prophet is the listener. And in prayer, the roles are reversed, that the person is the speaker and God is the listener. But it's a dialogue in the sense that there's a real, as opposed to, you know, a monologue is often viewed as no real listener or no, let's say, engaged listener. When it comes to prayer, there's an engaged listener, and that is God. So that goes more to what Zach said. All right, everyone. Thank you for a lively discussion.
Why was there the